another issue of Delayed Live from Med City. I forgot the title there for a minute, EK. We're here talking to EK Huckabee about his art. This is a series of conversations with Atlanta artists about their own work, about the conditions in Atlanta for art production, where it's getting better, whether it's getting worse, the whole thing about contemporary civilization in art right now, actually. We try to be parochial and global at the same time. EK, gosh, I guess I met you over 20 years ago or so, I guess, right at the old Small Press bookshop when it was over off of Peachtree Street. I believe you had a two-headed dog in the window.
A three-headed dog. Yes, right. Yes. You were there at Small Press, and I believe you sold me some 90 pounds of books or more.
That's right. You were one of the few artists I knew, and still know, actually, that read a lot of theory and kept up with certain theoretical currents. Do you still read in those areas or involved with that at all?
I still have to read because every two lines I read indicates something else that I don't know that I now have to track down and find out.
Exactly. I think a lot of times artists think that, well, I don't know, maybe this is my own bad perception of some artists, but they think that there is a disconnect between knowledge and reading and the visual arts themselves. But to me, they have to go hand in hand because there's an interpretive element there, and you have to be sort of, in a way, one step ahead of the critics, you know.
You need to second guess or third guess any aspect of your audience, not just the critics, but the people that are bringing their own frames of reference to the work as they see it. Perhaps a lot of artists don't involve themselves a lot in theory because they just get tired of explaining their own work.
They
want to draw a line and say, this is what the work is about. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, and at a certain point, an artist has to do that, no matter how astute one is theoretically, unless that is your métier, theoretical art, conceptual art, I guess, then you have to continue on with that process. But, you know, it's always struck me that you had what I haven't really kept up with your work, unfortunately, too much lately. You're now represented by
Solomon Projects.
My bad, I haven't been over there to see any of your openings lately, but keep me on your list, okay?
You're on the list, for
okay,
sure.
Right. But I'd always thought that you had sort of a gothic sensibility. Is that a fair comment? And I mean that both in the medieval sense and in the more contemporary sense of goth.
In the southern
gothic, exactly. Is that a fair characterization of?
I'm comfortable with all of those things, but not comfortable with limiting myself to that.
Right. Yeah. How would you characterize a gothic sensibility, and then how would you characterize the aspect of your work that goes beyond, or around, or beside that sort of sensibility?
A gothic sensibility is drinking wine in a graveyard. You know, we enjoy this. Yes, or absent. Better, much better. we enjoy today because tomorrow we die.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in a world of dead ideas as well, of dead traditions that are pushed along nevertheless. So it's a recognition of that too. As far as how my work would fit into that, there are those aspects that I like to bring into the work, the recognition of death in a culture where it's usually put at a distance, or where it's where there are reasons not to televise it.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the numbers. Only that gets through. Visually, that is not seen much in this culture, except in perhaps in film,
mm-hmm.
Where it's always tied in with a sense of religious guilt.
Right. Well, especially in the South, it often accompanies that sort of guilt, you know, very good Southern Baptist guilt mechanism built into it, I think, there.
Right. And it's an easy thing to do. It's too easy because all the imagery is free, mm-hmm. and there are centuries of it mm-hmm. that are able to use visually. Mm-hmm. So it's something important, but I'm always concerned with what I'm doing if it's too easy.
In the sense of
well, the animal pieces, one example. Mm-hmm. I've done, I think, a total of 3 pieces mm-hmm. Specifically involving taxidermy dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's 3 pieces over more than 20 years. They get a lot of attention,
right.
Maybe too much attention.
Well, this sort of a shock,
but they're too easy.
Yeah, yes. The shock value aspect, you mean?
Right, yeah. Right. And it would be quite simple to continue doing those, mm-hmm. to keep things stirred.
Do you think it's even possible to really shock the audience these days? You know, a few years back.
Oh, it's too easy because you just look at headlines.
Right.
You take what people are being told to respond to, mm-hmm. And you give that the twist that you valorize it instead of putting it down.
Mm-hmm. But it's a shock that doesn't have much value other than marketing value. I'm talking about TV and movies and things like that in the sense of, shocking the bourgeoisie, because now every other movie really is sort of shocking in a way. You know, TV, I mean, Anna Nicole Smith, for God's sakes, digging her up and replanting her and digging her up and moving her around, you know.
And going on tour.
And going on
That's
tour.
The next thing. Going on
taking
tour.
Taking the body,
body
tour.
On the bus.
Right,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so along with the death aspect, there's also a haunting aspect. You know, the reason I'm interested in this right now is because we're doing a hauntology issue of perforations. And so would you say that there's also the coming back aspect of the dead? Does that figure in your work at all, the haunting aspect of it? Obviously, the works themselves that I've seen of yours are haunting in the sense of having that mysteriousness, or melancholic aspect, surreal aspect to them. But would you say that the aspect of the dead coming back, you were talking about dead ideas, but the dead don't really go away anymore. They're always in this, it seems to me, they're in this holding tank of capitalism, ready to be brought forth at any minute.
The ideas aren't going away, and I think a lot of the work that I do is haunted by concepts or what we bring to the work being haunted, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we're reminding ourselves mm-hmm. of ideas, maybe of loops that we don't realize that we're playing back, that we're able to see in a slightly different perspective. Hopefully through the work. Objects themselves being haunted,
mm-hmm.
Not just our experience, mm-hmm. but encountering objects that seem to carry this with them that need to be seen in a different light.
I think that's a very important point. Now that we know that God is dead, we don't have to worry about God, but we do have to worry about the objects around us that seem to be continually seducing us, threatening us, coming alive. The whole post-human thing and the computer revolution, the nano revolution, I think we're reaching a point where you will never know whether the couch you're sitting on has its own consciousness, you know, built into it somehow with microprocessors, which is tied into the net, which is tied into supercomputers. So objects themselves take on a peculiar, luminescent, a fetishistic quality, which originally, you know, had a very sacred, numinous glow to them. And your work often seems to really accentuate that numinosity coming from objects and the very atmosphere itself of the paint that you use sometimes. And I know you were doing experiments in paint chemistry at one point, right? Are you still pursuing this?
I do that. I wouldn't call them experiments because I'm lax of a scientist.
Right.
I do try a lot of different mixtures for effect, but unlike science, I have a predetermined notion of what I want to achieve. And if I have a fascination somewhere along the line, the experiment stops there because I'm pleased with the result. But I began changing the media that I use, primarily in oil painting, in order to falsely age pieces, to bring in the notion of the piece that has age effects on it also carrying a kind of authenticity, a kind of veneration that maybe it doesn't need to have. And in order to do this, I studied the defects in the paint industry and then applied their careful technical reasons for why paint coatings fail in industry, and took those as my recipes to make the coatings fail, to make deliberate mistakes, because those I felt were more interesting. And it's kind of a seductive element, too, bringing people to look closer to the work rather than just have their eyes roll over it very quickly.
Right.
If anything, this is my one reason for still painting instead of doing things digitally, is that I'm making an object that rewards appreciation physically, up close. The paintings are not just graphic images, they're objects. And there are qualities that maybe only something like a fingerprint camera could catch and give you digitally, whereas in person, getting closer, getting 20 foot, 5 foot, 5 inches from the painting is a different experience.
So it opens up in different ways depending on how you approach the painting or how close you approach it. There's a sensuous quality to it that
it should.
For anybody, it doesn't matter whether they conceptually would lock into your particular schema, right?
Right. There's some. So in that sense, I'm concerned with having something for everyone. But maybe that's my limit for.
Do you have art patrons at openings or afterwards come up to you and talk to you about your work or what you're about, or what kind of questions do you usually have to field with people who are not, let's say, not critics, but the just the interested art person, you know, who wants to know what you're about. What kind of questions? Do you have any? Do they approach you like that often?
Depending on the audience, I do get a lot of material questions, where things come from, especially if they're suspect. Any piece that's done with human or animal tissue, I get questions about the source of that. Not too seriously condemning. Generally, it's about my emotional input into the work.
They're worried about your emotional state.
they might be, but they phrase it as a question.
Right.
So
are you okay, Kay?
Kind of like that. I'm fine now that this is done. Generally that, and which I'm glad for, not so much tedious questions. The problem that I do have in that kind of situation is that I think I'm hardwired not to repeat anything. So I have to make a slightly different response for myself each time without making it look like that I'm lying about the subject. The work may be a lie. But at least the question is being responded to honestly.
Well, in a way, some people or some theorists, Nietzsche, for example, say that art is always a lie, but it's a lie that helps us deal with the truth of the world somehow. Would you take that point of view about your art, that somehow it's a lie in some sense? I mean, in the sense that, if nothing else, that Nietzsche was talking about, that it's a fabrication that allows us to penetrate a little deeper into something.
The two media that I work in are two different kinds of lies. As far as painting, my goal is to show partial truth. which is a very high goal, I think. I don't know if I seldom accomplish that, but to show a partial truth with a small t, never more than that, and always leaving something for the viewer to complete.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the larger objects, the assemblage primarily, much of it is deliberately a lie. Because of my inspiration from the models and displays, dioramas, tableaus, that you would find in natural history museums, for example. The kind of models that were made at a certain time to deliver a certain fact or truth to the public. But while making the model, deliberate lies have to be told, or lots of omissions have to be made to emphasize one particular fact. And over time, these facts are put into question. The omissions become much more important than the fact that's demonstrated. And this kind of quality that the obsolete models take on is more of an inspiration to me than the fine art in museums.
Would you say that you are a pragmatic artist? Because thinking in terms of your subject matter, a lot of times death, hauntings, revenants, the eclipse of truth, and other things coming through. Do you think you're a pragmatic artist? Do you think you're a psychoanalytic artist? One would almost tend to want to say, add in there a third category, a metaphysical artist, even though I don't know if you would take either three of those. How would you characterize, your approach from those sort of theoretical perspectives? Because sometimes your work does seem to have, loosely speaking, a sort of psychoanalytic component to it. You know, if someone's reading and say, I think I can do some reading into that. But generally speaking, it also has a metaphysical overlay to it. It seems to me a lot of times the death thing.
I would like to think of it as being closer to a literary model.
Literary,
where the what's expressed might be metaphysical, or the context of explaining it as metaphysical might point to something that's very empirical, something that's very fundamental and everyday. And as far as psychoanalytical, probably not. That's getting to me closer to a science or an attempt at science, which suggests that I have an answer that I don't have.
Right. Well, I guess what I meant by that is that some recognition or emphasis on human interaction, and specifically with unconscious sort of patterns of human interaction. It's just occasionally, whenever you see a figure in a painting and interacting with the environment of other figures, sometimes that comes to the front. I don't mean it's any kind of science, of course, but just some sort of vague kind of approach to things.
Which is exactly why I put so few figures in the work. Probably 5% of the body of work that I've done has human figures in it. Because I think of that as putting actors on a stage, and you're watching it at a distance. Although I do a lot of stages, a lot of realist interiors, but they're not peopled to make it easier for the viewer to project into that scene.
They do seem haunted, though, that's for sure.
Well, thank you. They should be.
Right. Is there any reason why you, or maybe you have done experiments in other sorts of media, especially new media, video, film, computer work, things like that? Have you done things with that, or have you contemplated doing things in what's now called new media, technical media?
Well, primarily I'm an old-fashioned boy, so I haven't done that,
right.
and trying to get more old-fashioned by the day. There may be some work forthcoming. With that, some ideas that I've tumbled lapidarily for a while keep coming up that they need to be time-based.
Mm-hmm.
which is something I haven't done before.
Sure, when you think of the Quay brothers, and I mean, there are various people who do stop-action animation with live animation that have... the same strikes me as a sensibility that you would be able to translate into, as you said, a time-based medium in some form. You even fit in with a Lynchian, a David Lynch kind of modality, I would say. Is that a fair statement? I guess you've seen David Lynch's.
Well, it's far more than fair. Perhaps, but we'll see what I can do in that area. Mm-hmm. There are some things. I don't do sound, for example, but I have friends that do sound.
I know you're very interested
that
in
I'm
sound.
Collaborating with. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get out of my comfortable chair and get into something that's a little cold and uncomfortable to see if I can make it work also.
Get out of your comfort zone, as they say now.
No, completely out of that zone.
Right. Speaking of comfort zone, you've been around Atlanta for a long time, and you've seen the Atlanta scene change, come and go. Do you have any thoughts about Atlanta then, let's say 25 years ago, 20 years ago? When did you start showing on a regular basis in Atlanta or other places even?
Oh, mid-80s? The first show that I did through the gracious interest of Alan Sondheim was in 83 at Nexus Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I've just divided the audience between who knows what Nexus is and who doesn't.
Right, and who knows Alan Sondheim and who doesn't.
Yes. And
he may be doing a podcast coming up at some point.
Terrific.
I've asked him about that, yeah.
Terrific. But I didn't begin. I started in 83, only showing at alternative spaces for, I guess, about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally... developed a body of work that I guess validated me, so I could move into a commercial representative as well. In all this time, the opportunities seem to have opened, as far as I can tell. I don't live in Atlanta. I'm outside of the city. But from my experience, there seem to be a lot more opportunities for people that... want to put the effort into it.
So you think that the environment for art production and for actually perhaps making some money off of one's... I'm assuming you don't support yourself from your art, but that you do sell occasionally, right?
I do sell occasionally, not entirely to support myself.
So you think that... But do you think that the environment now is better than it was, let's say, in 84, 85?
Just judging from the Yellow Pages listings, yes. Having to say that. As far as actual sales figures, of course, I'm not privileged to that.
Right.
But certainly the venues where one can do something and get a showing have increased.
There seem to be many, many more galleries than there were then. I sometimes go back and forth about it. Obviously, the population of Atlanta was maybe 1.5 million back back in 84 or something like that.
Mm. Yeah, and it's 3 million now.
Yeah, well, going on 5 million.
My numbers are way off.
I don't know how many counties you want to count. It's now the 27 county metro area. Maybe it goes all the way to Chattanooga and Birmingham. Who the hell knows?
The way to the Atlantic.
Yeah, but sometimes it seems inside the city there are fewer alternative venues, many more commercial galleries, of course, and very high quality commercial galleries, but fewer alternative spaces simply because there are fewer available spaces. Everything is being taken up by development and things like that. Of course, you are now out of that stage in your career when you would rely on alternative spaces, since you're repped by Nancy Solomon and regular shows at Solomon Projects. But do you have friends, younger friends, who are involved in the Atlanta scene, who have commented on exhibition opportunities in Atlanta for, beginning artists at all?
Not so much. So I can't really answer
right.
for that.
Yeah.
Just going by the impression that I get from my occasional trips into town, that it's a better environment, but it's not one that's easy. They don't come and pull you out of your white room and insist that you show something.
Well, they probably never have done that, except for Alan Sondheim, maybe.
Well, yes, that was one of his methods.
So do you keep up with the national scene or even the international scene and art historical currents and things like that? Magazines, art.
I make the token effort.
Right.
It's impossible. The more you try to know, the more you realize you don't know of what's going on. But it gives you the, I can say zeitgeist, can't I? It gives you that. And it gives you ideas that are in play. Because it's a big cocktail party, and you don't want to tell an anecdote that's just been told by someone else.
Which is increasingly hard not to do, because there are lots of people creating art now and out there pushing things around on the web, the net, and all kinds of ways. So I sometimes have an idea. I think, well, this is an original idea. Then I pick up a art form and art flash and art papers, and I think, no, I don't think I'm going to be doing that. Somebody's already gone there with it.
Someone else has done it. It's important to keep up with that aspect.
So do you have any overall feeling about the direction of art production now on us? I mean, it's impossible to say on any kind of, even within the United States, but for a while there were all these distinct schools, not all of them, there were only a handful, really. But now there's just been such an explosion of effects and affects and productions that it's hard to make any sort of generalizable statements on it, I guess. Do you have any observations about it? Just art production in general, just from looking at all the magazines.
Only the impression that I'm predicting there would be a trend toward simplifying, which is no big thing to say. With all of the technology that's around, it's very easy to say. Now people will go the other way and attempt to make something even simpler than folk artists. If they set that as the high end that they don't want to achieve, how much simpler and minimal can they go beyond the folk artist that's using mud on plywood?
Mm-hmm.